Welcome. This is Jill McLay, Policy Liaison for the Global Alliance for Behavioral Health and Social Justice. Today's podcast is being recorded at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Interdisciplinary Conference on Human Trafficking. I was able to get some time with Lauren Pinkston, who is currently working in Laos while also working on her dissertation at Clemson University. Laura, we really appreciate you taking some time out of the conference to talk with me and our listeners about human trafficking and the situation in Laos.
Yeah, it's an honor.
So why don't we just start out with you telling us a little bit about what is known about human trafficking in Laos.
So Laos is a country that doesn't get much attention in the global scheme of human trafficking. So it's hard to collect data. There's 86 languages spoken in the country and lots of tribal groups that are nestled in the heart of really mountainous terrain. And so gathering data in the country is difficult and kind of disseminating information is difficult as well. But what we do know is that there are a lot of girls, mostly minor females who are trafficked within the country. And they are, what I like to say is they're socialized to exploit themselves because no one is, I don't want to say no one, but rarely are girls trafficked in bondage and locked up and forced to prostitute themselves, but they are socialized to accept that if they will prostitute themselves and they can raise money for their families to send home, and they do all of that under the leadership or under the coercion of a mamasan, someone who is running a brothel type establishment. And so often minor girls will be coerced into coming to work in a larger city so that they can work as a waitress or as someone selling beer at a local beer garden. And then over the course of time, they're socialized to accept that prostitution is a good choice for them to make an income to send money back home to support their families.
And geographically, Laos is located right next to Thailand, which is much more well known for trafficking internationally. Mm-hmm. So how does human trafficking look in that country, and how is it maybe different mm-hmm. and similar to what you see in Laos?
So Thailand is because of its location and because of its development, it is a major, major transit country and a country where people are coming to work as migrants. And so you've got Myanmar in the northwest part of Thailand, so you have Rohingya Muslims that are coming in as refugees seeking asylum. You have people coming from Laos seeking work opportunities, people coming from Cambodia seeking work opportunities, people coming from Malaysia seeking work opportunities, seeking religious freedom. So a lot of countries surrounding Thailand are a lot less developed, and so much illegal migration coming into Thailand. I don't know the stats for other countries, but Laos is a country with 7 million people, and 700,000 Lao are working in Thailand. And so a tenth of the Lao population is working in Thailand, and only 30% of those people are actually documented legally as migrant workers. And so you've got a large number of illegal migrants, and the Thai government is really cracking down on this. So now the Lao embassy in Thailand is registering 1,000 Lao people per day, and they have 4 months to register every Lao person working in Thailand before the government starts deporting people that they recover.
Wow. So what are some of the challenges that countries face and trying to, that you know, Laos and that Thailand are facing and trying to address human trafficking?
Mm-hmm. There's so many different forms of trafficking going on. So you have illegal migration, which is a major one. Very porous borders between Thailand and Laos because of their traditional cultural similarities and their history. So it's very easy to cross the borders. The Mekong River is flowing between Laos and Thailand, and so people are not actually crossing through legal border checkpoints. They're just crossing the river and walking through on the other side. You have the illegal labor trafficking in the fishing boat sector in the south of Thailand. You have Chinese brides, or women being trafficked from Laos to be brides in China, so from children to young females who are minors. Again, refugee issues. You have sex trafficking, which is quite rampant in and around larger cities in Thailand. So many different types of trafficking, not to mention drug trafficking. So per capita, Laos has the largest amount of opium trafficking in the region, and so lots of opium being moved from Vietnam through Laos to Thailand. So lots of overwhelming issues in the region, and not the capacity to keep up with the amount of illegal activity.
Right, and we hear a lot on the news about international non-governmental organizations or NGOs that are working in human trafficking. What kind of challenges do they face when they're working in countries like Laos or Thailand?
Mm-hmm. So from a government perspective, Laos is a challenge because it's functioning as a democratic republic, but it is legally a democratic republic, but it functions as a communist country. And so there are many bribes that have to be paid to come and work in the country as an INGO. So that's a challenge. Getting work visas is a challenge. Just the simple understanding of societal constructs and understanding the language is a challenge. I'd say that for most foreigners that are coming from Western countries, the thing that most people struggle with is letting go of what we understand about the world, letting go of how we conceptualize a society, and kind of reworking our minds to open our minds to understand how the people that we're working with locally understand the societal constructs and understand what freedom is about, understand what their basic needs are, and seeking to understand these needs before we kind of impose what we think needs to be developed in their own countries, if that makes sense.
It does. And do you have some examples or some ideas of how NGOs are or could work to address these challenges?
So pre-field training is really huge for people who are coming to work in any kind of cross-cultural sector. So not just Westerners coming to Laos and to Thailand, but even people working cross-culturally in the U.S. or in a Western country. But I would say that once you're in country, seeking to understand the language is so important, because if you cannot understand the language, then you can't understand the values that the people that you're working with have. One thing that really stuck out to me was the word freedom. When I learned the word in Lao, and I learned how to say it in Lao, but I didn't understand what it meant. And so when I was finally able to kind of break the word down and understand that, for me as a Westerner, I define freedom as being individualistic, having the freedom to make my own choices and move wherever I want to move and have whatever job I want to have and work my way up. That to me is freedom. But when I started speaking with people in Laos, that was a totally new concept, a totally new idea. And that's not how they think about the world. And their idea of freedom is having a patron, having someone that they are indebted to, but that they know is going to take care of them. So there's such limited resources in Laos that you need to work the system in a way that you are finding someone with the ability to provide your basic needs in case something happens. So for example, if you're a rice farmer and the rainy season is not lucrative, that, you know, rains don't come and your rice crop doesn't come in, then you have no way for the next 6 months to put food on the table for your family. But if you have a patron who has the money, has a position of authority in the community, and you know will be able to provide food or provide a place for your child to study in university or whatever it is that you feel like you need in your life, then you will indebt yourself to that person. And sometimes often that means sexual indebtedness to that person, so that you can make sure your family has all of their needs met. And it sounds twisted in our minds, but we have the privilege of being able to consider freedom in the way that we do, because we have all of our basic needs met. And for someone who doesn't have that privilege, I think we have to honor and respect the ways that people have learned to survive in a society where just the basic resources are not there.
It's a really good point. If we don't understand where people are coming from, then we're not going to be able to help get them out of situations that are dangerous for them, mm-hmm. And for their families in the long run.
Yeah, I remember speaking with a young person who had come over from the States and was volunteering with a group of survivors who had been rescued out of sex trafficking, and she said, "We just need to have them dream about what they want to be in their life, whatever it is that they want to be. If they want to be doctors or nurses, and what just have them dream." And I thought they've never been allowed to dream before because someone's always told them what they're going to be, and they're going to be whatever their dad tells them they're going to be, and they're going to be whatever opportunities open up, not whatever they choose. And it's I would wish all of that for them. I would wish for the people that I love that they could have whatever they want and be whoever they want, but the society as a whole isn't looking for that because they have figured out how to work in community and using each other's gifts and each other's connections in a way that really works for them in a totally different way that we're not used to in an individualistic culture. And so I hope that it's not sounding like I don't hold the same level of appreciation for, or desire that everyone would have our same level of freedom as we would conceptualize it, but I think it's healthy for us to take a step back and say, in other societies and other cultures, the value of community, the value of working together, the value of having a patron or being, being the client is something that it's okay sometimes to step back and say, you've got a system that's working for you, and help me to understand your system before I come and shake it all up.
Right, and the lessons that you're learning in Laos and that you're sharing with us, I'm sure reverberate in other places, in other contexts.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
We talk a lot about culture, but we're still very much figuring out how to do culture.
Sure.
And so we appreciate these lessons that you have shared with us, and wish you all of the best in your work in human trafficking in Laos and Thailand.
Thank you.